Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You not seen that?
Hello and welcome to another episode of How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That? The Whoa. Fan Critical Podcast.
Wow, just the language. Language warning.
No. How the feck?
No.
Okay, NSFW. The Fan Critical Podcast, where we delve into our closets of shame and admit to the films we really should have seen, but haven't. Today I'm your host, Lucy. Mm. I'm back. And it is the turn of Len.
She's back, baby.
She's back. The bitch is back. It's the turn of Len to reveal the classic film he hasn't actually seen. Hello, Len.
Hello. And I'm ashamed to say. Do you want me to say it now? Or do you want me to say it now, Luce?
I'm going
to
do a little intro. Just say hello to Gaz. And yeah, then
yeah.
Ask
yeah,
you.
Say hello to him. Say hello,
hello.
To the, say hello,
hello
to the
I'm also
fellow.
Here.
Also joined by Gaz.
What's up?
He's back too.
Yep.
So, Len, I have to ask, and I say this with all sincerity, how the fuck have you not seen The Usual Suspects?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, good question.
Good question.
It's one of those where always had it on DVD, like my dad had it or whatever. I remember seeing the DVD very vividly. This is when DVDs were like,
more a thing.
You know, when your family used to bring home a DVD and you were like, oh, cool. And they were in these massive cases and it just, they were stupid. We had that and my dad watched it. I remember.
Did it have like a slip
just,
case?
It was always, oh, yeah.
Like you had to take it out of the slip case to open it.
It had like a Perspex case. That's, you know, when they were
the
like
slip
a
case
thing.
Is like special edition, I think.
Oh, because I had
yeah,
Memento
on
slip
edition.
Case. It's fucking annoying because,
oh, nice.
Like to open it, yeah. You have to slide it out first and then open it. Like, nobody needs that. Nobody needs that.
They're
it's
usually like
the
double DVD ones when it's a slip case as well.
That's it, yeah.
Double disc.
Yeah.
Special features.
So I remember always seeing this DVD and then being like, oh, everyone's raving about this, I should watch it. And then it just sort of got longer and longer and everyone, like, said, you know, it sort of faded out of memory a bit. And then, like, whenever everyone talks about it, I'm just like, yeah, one with Kevin Spacey, yeah? That one, big time.
yeah.
And then, you know, I was. I've just lied about it constantly. I have to say, I'm a filthy liar. It's like Reservoir Dogs all over again. I've just been lying through my teeth.
How often would you say it's come up that you've had to lie about it? People talking about
probably. I would say once a year,
on
maybe.
Average. Okay.
On average, yeah. If you equate that over my sort of 20 or so
carry
years,
one,
I'd say
yeah.
Probably I've lied about it about 20 times
okay,
in my life.
Wow.
So yeah, one a year.
Right. Well, a lot of people talking about The Usual Suspects then, didn't realise. So what
well,
did
it
you
all came,
think
it all came
film?
In 1 year. Like all 20 of those lies came in the first year.
All Kaiser Soze. Kaiser Soze.
It was in our WhatsApp last week where you were like, have you not seen The Usual Suspects? I have seen it. What?
Stop lying.
Again and again. Well, what were your expectations then going in, Len?
I have to say, expectation-wise, I thought, do you want my thoughts on the film as well and my blueberry score?
Yeah,
we're just going to roll
just,
into that.
Like, talk about your expectations, whether it lived up to them.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, your blueberry score and a brief explanation of the scoring system for our new listeners. Hello, if you're new.
Yeah, hello, if you're new. The scoring system is we rate everything in the blueberry fashion, and there can be 0 to 5 blueberries. And there can be no halves, so you have to be very harsh and fair. Mm. You can't like do a 3.5; it's ridiculous. You can't do that.
No,
it's either a 3 or it's a 4.
Yeah.
And my expectations of this film were very high. Like everyone always talks about this film in such high regard as a great mystery, and I actually like the director Bryan Singer a lot. And I like Kevin
going.
Spacey as an actor, regardless of what he. Is alleged to have done.
I don't think
or
you're allowed to say it though.
I don't even know. I don't even know what's going on with Kevin Spacey
say
at the
allegedly.
Moment. I don't even know what's honestly. Yeah, allegedly, fine. So I came to this film this afternoon, and I'll set the scene. I've got the, you know, my girlfriend's at work, and I'm looking after our puppy. She's 7 months
old.
Girlfriend,
she's
the biggest puppy in the world as well.
Yeah, she's a 45-kilogram Great
horse.
Dane at the moment.
She's a horse. She's literally a small horse. Like,
and I have... She does this thing where she doesn't realise how big she is. She just... She's chewing on my hand right now as we speak. But she just climbs all over people like she's a little terrier or something. You know. So I'm trying to watch this film. I reckon I paused the film in excess of 25 times.
Oh my God,
because
that's not
she
helpful.
Was just
climbing. One for every lie you told about watching it.
Because she was just climbing over me, and then she was barking madly at something. I was like, what is wrong with you this afternoon? So she had a vendetta against the film. But other than that, I have to say, I do not understand why people think this film is so amazing.
Oh, get fucked, mate.
I honestly think it's very convoluted, and I don't like any of the... See, whereas we've watched Reservoir Dogs, you actually really relate to some of the characters and sort of sympathise with them, and they have a bit more, I don't know, just a bit more character about them. But in this, I was just like, oh my God, I don't really get the five of them being a crew. I thought the twist was obvious from the start. Like, I didn't know it. I swear I didn't know it. And I was just like, well, Kevin Spacey's the guy or something. It's that is obvious as hell,
mate.
And overall, I just felt like, was I really interested in this heist or whatever that was going on? Because I wasn't. I wasn't really interested in it at all. And I honestly have to say, maybe it's because people hype this film up, but there are so many better crime films than this that have a twist at the end that I can't even believe.
Name
this
one.
Is... What? Like a film that has a twist?
No, a crime film.
A better
twist.
Crime film with a twist. You said there are so many.
Even starring Kevin Spacey again, something like Seven, for example, is a far better film than this and has a better twist at the end and has... Sort of a
different
bit,
type
a bit,
of film,
a
though, mate.
Character.
Different type
it's
of film.
Not really a crime drama.
Well, even Ocean's 11, I think, has better elements
What's
to it than this film.
What's the twist in Ocean's 11?
Oh,
well,
come
just
on.
Just the general sort of crime plotting.
You're digging. You're allowed your opinion. That's fine. Carry on. Ocean's 11's better than Usual Suspects, official.
I just didn't enjoy it.
Do you think that's because
like
you were
Ocean's
pausing
11.
It upwards of 25 times? Because you really have to sit and concentrate and not
100%.
Be paused.
No. Because I fully understood what was going on. I always watch a film with subtitles, so I am super detailed. I want to know everything they're saying, any little throwaway lines. And I 100% was paying attention. I 100% was tracking with it. But at the end of the day, I just felt... It's very convoluted for something that in the end is made up. Like the whole thing is like, oh, isn't this cool that he just made everything up from the board behind you? But you don't really see. And I went back to look after watching it. I was like, and I actually did a bit of Googling as well. I was like, do you actually see these hints in frame at any point? And there's not that many times that you do. So it's really convoluted. The whole story at the end didn't even happen. Like you don't actually know what happened. You know, it's for me, there's much better out there. I'm going to give it 3 blueberries because I still think it's quite well edited. The acting at times is very good. But that's it for me. 3 blueberry film.
Wow.
Harsh.
That is harsh. But, you know, we're all entitled to our opinions. And I think sometimes
100%, yeah.
A film that is so overhyped and we've all gone, how the fuck have you not seen this? I'm not saying it is overhyped, but it's been really hyped up. And then you watch it and you're like, huh. Okay, like, it's good, but I don't understand why it's so well-rated. But that is your opinion. Gaz, what do you think? Counter.
Well, it's just the fact is...
Is it better than Ocean's 11 first? That's the barometer for all films now. Better than Ocean's 11.
I just want to say, I don't dislike Ocean's 11, and I don't think Ocean's 11 is better than this. However, it's more interesting. I'm actually interested in the plot of that, whereas I felt with this, it's kind of pointless. Like, just to say, everyone's like, oh, is Keaton alive or dead? Keaton's not a likable character. I don't care about Keaton. Like, I don't give a fuck if he's dead or alive, to be completely honest.
Who's
with
saying
you.
Is he alive and then or dead? It's only really verbal Kint that cares. And the
No. It's agent who cares. That's where they want agent, you to believe agent. The plot's going. Then it goes on.
You weren't paying attention to this film.
Kozel or whatever.
Well, we'll see in the quiz, Gaz. We'll see who the real fan is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it. Yeah, anyway, I didn't care about Keaton. There's no characters that I like. Anyway, go on, Gareth.
Okay. Look, I mean, you did say there are better films than this, like Ocean's 11. So
that is recorded.
Yeah. That's on tape, mate. I think I do get where you're coming from a relatability perspective with the characters. I get that. That's a fair point to make. However,
yes.
Do you like any of the characters, Gareth? Do you actually like them? Do you actually think that's a memorable character?
I don't think you have to like a character to be interested in their story.
Do you think they're memorable?
Yeah.
Do you think they're memorable?
Yeah, I do.
Who's
yeah.
memorable in this?
Verbal Kint. What's his name again?
Kobayashi.
That was a joke.
Kobayashi.
He's memorable.
I am Mr. Kobayashi.
Something that we have to consider with Len's view of this film, and as much as he denies it, it played a factor. If he's pausing the film constantly, this is not the film to pause constantly while you're watching it. That's going to have a massive impact on your enjoyment of it. I watched it this afternoon with my wife, and she wanted to get up and make a coffee, and I was like, right, we're pausing the film. She's like, no, it's fine. I was like, definitely not with this movie. You've got to watch it. You've got to pay close attention. As it turned out, we had already watched it a couple of years ago together, and she only realised halfway through, but that's not the point. Point is, it is a film... Oh, so annoying. It's a film that you do have to really be in the moment with it, and you have to be paying attention. So I think that has factored into Len's score. Not that I want to speak for you, mate, but that's just... I swear it didn't. And I also get that this is a common phenomenon. When you have had a film hyped up to the 10th degree and then you go and watch it yourself, you're always going to be looking for what it is that makes this film amazing. And if it's been overhyped for you, that it's only going to disappoint. Nothing can meet those expectations. So I think that you've got a heavily influenced score that isn't necessarily reflective of what the movie would have been to you if you just watched it at the time when everybody else told you to watch it.
Yeah.
All I'll say is, like, I know I mentioned Ocean's 11, that was silly, but obviously I referenced Reservoir Dogs, one of our other films I hadn't seen. And I think that has a similar sort of like, oh, it's a bit of a mystery, what happened? And then it gets revealed at the end or throughout the film what's going on. And there's a bit of, you know, that for me is a better barometer example. Like, that is leaps and bounds above this film. And I gave that a 4. So that's my scoring system.
Is it better
system.
Than Ocean's 11, Reservoir Dogs,
would you say?
100%.
Okay. Are we going to do Ocean's 12 at any point as well, just to see whether that's better?
Ocean's 8. Although James Corden turns up. Ugh.
Yeah, James Corden's in it, so no.
So new.
And I also think, Len, I know you're saying that the twist is obvious. I think that's because you've heard so much about the film. You've heard that it's the Kevin Spacey movie. Like, people talk about it. The Kevin Spacey's movie, Usual Suspects.
Yeah. So twist. There's a twist. What a good twist.
I think that's got to play a part as well. Because I do remember the first time I watched
it. Maybe, yeah.
And I didn't see it coming. Maybe I should have. I didn't at all. And it was an incredible ending for me, which had a huge impact, and that's why it's a 5 blueberry film for me. It isn't necessarily a 5 blueberry film when I watched it this afternoon for the 5th time or whatever, because I know where it's all going. But there's still parts of that are kind of cool, where you kind of pick up on the little hints as you go along that you might have missed previously. But that first viewing, if you don't know that it is Kevin Spacey. We should put out a spoiler warning, actually, shouldn't we?
I don't think anyone's listening to this if they haven't.
If you haven't watched Usual Suspects, don't listen to us talk about it. Go and watch it first, because that ending is the key. It's the key factor that brings the whole film together. It's brilliant. And it's a 5 blueberry movie.
Okay, Gaz, love it. This film was always one of my favourite films, especially when I was younger, partly because I thought it was great, but I also think I wanted to seem a bit different and a bit edgier, you know? Like, oh yeah, Usual Suspect. Well, you haven't heard of it. That's one of my favourite films. That's the kind of teenager I was. I think watching it again, I've probably seen it about the same amount of times as you, Gaz, like 4 or 5 times. I think it does stand up well to the test of time, watching it again. I think there's quite a dreary drudginess to it. And what you said, Len, about none of the characters being likeable, that kind of stood out quite a lot to me watching it again. Didn't affect my viewing, but I think nowadays films, they always try and have some kind of wisecracking protagonist or something. Not really any of that in this film. And, you know, watching it, we're talking about Kevin Spacey. Again, he was one of my favourite actors. I watched LA Confidential the week before watching this because it's just... He's just in some of my favourite films, unfortunately, because of the quite serious allegations against him. And I think the film after this, there was quite a lot of films in the 90s. I'm not going to name any of them because I can't remember, but that not good films, but they tried to do this kind of thing. And they just can't better it. And you say that you saw the twist coming, Len, and maybe you did. But
I did, but maybe Gaz is right. Maybe it's subconscious.
There's thinking, oh, I bet it's Kevin Spacey. And then there's thinking... he's going to have seen this board behind the agent's head and he's just making this whole story up on the fly based on what he sees. Like, that's incredible, I think. I think it's just the impact that has when you watch it.
Yeah.
It goes beyond, oh, it turns out it was Kevin Spacey all along. It's that what he draws out and just the realisation, it still gives me chills of, you know, he drops the cup and everything. So I'm going to give it 5 blueberries as well because I think it's just a seminal piece of work. So mixed bag.
I will say that like it for me the issue is that you just don't care. Like there's no care involved here. Like I don't care for Keaton. I mean obviously the one that you care for the most is Kevin Spacey because you know that
you feel sorry for him like, a bit.
You feel sorry for him. You know, you're trying to be guilted into it. But at the end of the day, I don't really care about his character. I didn't care about the agents. I didn't care about the plot. I felt that wasn't really well explained because it's all obviously fabricated. The stakes weren't... They weren't relevant to me because I didn't care about any of the characters. And I think at the end of the day, if you're going to make me care about a plot twist, if you're going to make me care about something like this... You have to make the characters likable in some regard. Like Keaton's a bad cop who he's trying to do the right thing. He, you know, oh yeah, he's got a girlfriend now. He's trying to be all serious. I don't care. Keaton was literally one of the most bland central characters I've ever felt in a film.
Well, we're going to come on to like that, this. Actually.
Yeah.
I'll come on
to that. That was for me why it fell down. The twist is fine and all that sort of stuff. But if it had people I actually cared about, 100%, it would have been a better film.
Okay, I'm going to go on to this now because it's actually something I picked up on while watching it again. Because I've always found Gabriel Byrne's portrayal of Keaton...
Hey, Fenster, do your friend a favour. Tell him to keep quiet.
And the portrayal of him as represented through flashback by verbal as quite underwhelming. And the agents are all talking about him as being quite an evil character, really. They're quite... like insistent that he's bad and that he's scum and he never seems to do anything that bad really. He's quite detached, he's quite an underwhelming character in many ways, and it only occurred to me watching it again this time that is because he's being represented by Verbal, who has this attachment to him.
Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but I'm afraid of him. Well, I believe in God. And the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze.
Correct. This is it's the archetypal example of an unreliable narrator. Like,
yeah.
It's basically like that as a technique in film and TV is done in so many ways, and it's like often it's very subtle. This is almost breaking the fourth wall with it. Like it tells you at the end, this character has just made up everything that we've seen in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Like, I love that.
But it never occurred to me that stretch to Keaton, because I have always thought, like, it's quite an underwhelming performance. It's very pared back. And Keaton is built up, like you've said a couple of times, Len, I don't care about Keaton, like he's supposed to be this like bad guy, I don't care. And it only occurred to me watching it this final time, or this last time, that's all deliberate. And I just think that's just another layer to add to it. The fact that I've seen it that many times and it's only just occurred to me that that's all part of this unreliable narrator, as Len said. Len, sorry,
but Gaz said. Can I jump in, actually? Can I jump in here? And I think, actually, this is probably a really good reason why Len doesn't like the movie, is because he's picked up on that first time of watching it, for whatever reason. And I can see why that would be annoying, actually. If it's the first time you've ever watched it and you don't know sort of what the full story is, and then it's almost like at the end, it's almost like and it was all a dream sort of thing. Whereas for you and I, Lucy, maybe we watch it and we're invested properly in the film at the time, and then it's only in subsequent watches that we kind of gain those extra layers. And that's why it actually adds to our enjoyment of the film, whereas for Len, it takes away from his enjoyment.
I find unreliable narrator sort of storytelling very frustrating. I like it in small doses where there's a little bit of unwavering doubt. But for me, this is what I meant to you when I said in my rant at the start, like, none of it matters because he's just made it all up. And yeah, there is a Kobayashi.
Aren't all stories made up?
I don't know what his name is.
Well,
not the true Gareth. He's sitting there like, I don't know, like someone's recanting events. I don't want to be recanted events for two hours and then someone go, everything you just watched is a lie.
You don't know what is
guy.
A lie and what, cool. what isn't, because obviously a lot of that did happen because the boat is real, the explosion
it's
real,
a manipulation
the
of the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. But for me, I did find it, like you said, pointless. And like, just like I said to you, I don't. And Lucy said about, I felt about Keaton, like I felt it was a bit of a muddled story with him, because, and it makes sense now that you know, he's telling the story, you know, the old Kaiser Soze, but it was kind of like, at the start he was like, and you promised me no one's going to get killed. And then at the car heist bit where they kill Saul or whatever, he was like, refusing to kill him, and then obviously so Kaiser Soze kills him, you know.
Well, it's he's verbal kin at that point.
Verbal kin. And then I'm like, so he's a really good guy. And then at the end, he's just going guns akimbo, taking down loads of people on a tanker. So I was kind of like, I don't get it. It was muddled. And I get that because it's kind of, you know, Kevin Spacey trying to narrate his own events and then sort of coming to some sort of climax with it. But it felt muddled. And the only other thing I'll say about, because I just want to say about the think people thinking it's clever that he's made everything up off the board and off the cup and everything like that. It's not clever. The audience isn't privy to this information, which is the really frustrating part of that. Like, it would be so much smarter if we got glimpses or GVs or cutaways of some of these things, like Snatched even, throughout the film. But for me, I was watching it, I was just like, was this seeded? Was this intentional? It was like, no, Dad, there could have been anything back there and he just made it up. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter
to
me.
No, but it's more like, just the intellect of someone to be able to weave a whole story based on what they're seeing.
I get that, but as a viewer, if for these mystery things, the biggest enjoyment of these sorts of mysteries sometimes is trying to figure them out, and that is taken out of the viewer's like hands in this situation, or their eyes, because they're not given the opportunity to, and then they're just like, oh, everything we just told you is a lie as well. It's just like, oh, come on now.
But I don't think it is that everything is a lie. It's just that it's been constructed in a way that, like you say, we weren't privy to.
Yeah.
But you don't know what's true and what's false, because a lot of this stuff has happened. It just hasn't happened in the way we've been told. And now we're realising this. And he's just let this crime lord walk out the door and he's completely finessed him.
Yeah. And that is a good... That I do like that sequence. But yeah. Anyway, we got taken away from the point. But yeah, I felt... I understand now why Keaton's character is very confusing. And like you said, it's because of...
Yeah, I mean, it only occurred to me literally watching it this time. Because it's been a sticking point for me for a while, just thinking, he's just, yeah, it's just very sort of a background character, even though he's supposed to be the main one. And he's mentioned a lot as being an evil person, and you don't really see that. And then it only then just occurred to me why. So I think that's anything that you can find new meaning in repeated viewings is a very well crafted film, in my opinion. So obviously, Len, you've covered how you felt about the plot and the way it unravels. Gaz, what do you think about the plot? Do you think it's needlessly convoluted, or do you think that's all part of it?
I think it's all part of it, because you've got to remember that we're seeing the plot from Kaiser Soze's perspective, really.
How do you shoot the devil in the back? What if you miss?
And he wants things to be as complicated and confusing as possible. But and I think, to be fair, I only really kind of got it in my second viewing of the film. It does make sense. If you pay attention, the story makes sense. Like, it progresses properly. And as what's his name? I can't remember. The agent that Len called him. What is his name?
That is one of the quiz questions, so I'm not going to
answer. Excellent.
And don't look it up.
No, I won't. But as he kind of learns new information and brings that to Verbal Kent, that new information kind of becomes part of the story, and it's great. I love the way that happens. That's so carefully crafted as a script. I like the story, and I like the first kind of reveal at the end that it wasn't actually a drug deal. It was an assassination. It was a hit. I think that's great, and I think it all makes sense.
I read, when I was looking at trivia and stuff, the translator for the Hungarian got the word, it's like Pasha or something in Hungarian, but he mispronounces it, so it says package rather than man, and that's where they're expecting drugs, when actually, like you say, it's a hit. But you're not going to know that from watching it unless you're a Hungarian speaker, which many people will be. Maybe not our listeners. If you're listening in from Hungary, hello. Welcome.
Hello.
Don't know any Hello. Hungarian, so I can't speak Hello. To you about it. Len, you've kind of talked about what you thought about the plot. Do you have anything to add to this?
Look, I don't want to sound too negative about the film, because obviously there are good points to it. I am a sucker for sort of... and I guess this is the reason I find this... I don't think this film's aged out well, because heist movies, and I'm going to put heist in little commas like that, and these twisty things. There's actually a Rick and Morty episode about it, Gaz, which is bang on about stuff like this.
Yeah.
It's just like...
all the twists.
There's a twist, but then there's another twist, and then there's another twist. And there's just been so done now, and I think I can see how this film, at the time when it came out, was very revolutionary. And I believe it was probably, I might be wrong about this, but one of the first films to do it this well, in terms of the fact that... It like you said, I was going into it expecting a twist. So for me, it's
I think that's a problem with any film, where it's like the twist, and everyone goes, "Such a good twist!"
Exactly.
It's never going to be as good as I said.
It's like if someone went to see The Sixth Sense now, and then, you know, it just completely falls down if you take that away from it. So maybe, obviously, I'm skewed thinking about it, and I can understand how this set a lot of those other films in motion that we just talked about. You know, anything that has a sort of hook, line and sinker twist at the end of it could stem from a film like this, you know? So I just felt with the plot that did it need to go the way it did? They could have simplified it a little bit, I think, just in terms of they do the original heist, which is the emeralds for $3 million. Was it $3 million? Something like that. And I thought the film's going to be about the heist. And then they go to LA, and then there's this other job, and then there's this other job. And I was kind of like, could we make this about like one big job? Just do the whole film as one job. Like, and then maybe you've got more time to think about the characters and less about exposition about where they are, or we're going to LA, or this is my lawyer girlfriend, or this is this. It just felt to me that if they truncated it, simplified it, give more time to the characters, then I think it would have been a better film, because it was jumping all over the place all the time. And you've got the FBI agents and the DA and oh, all this stuff going on. I was like, God.
It's definitely a plot-based film rather than character-based.
Yeah. And I just feel, honestly, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think the best plots sometimes that have amazing twists are quite simple in their execution, but it's the investment in the characters that makes it worthwhile. Like talk about The Sixth Sense, right? Like, let's just talk about that for a second with a massive twist at the end. You care about Bruce Willis's character.
Spoiler warning.
Like, you care about these characters. Sorry. Yeah, you care about these characters.
I'm not giving anything away.
So when you get to the ending, you're actually like, Jesus, man, that's serious stuff. Whereas, as I said before, the whole thing with the Keaton thing at the first half of the film is like, Keaton's lied to us about his death before. Keaton's done this. Keaton is a really bad guy. I want to know if Keaton's alive or dead. I was like, to be honest with you, mate, from what I've seen of Keaton, I don't give a fuck if he's alive or dead. And then they talk, like, to be completely honest with you, and that's the thing. If they set that up as like a twist, that's, you know, that's kind of what you want to...
I don't think that's, you know, the twist, mate. Care. I don't think that's... No. I don't think
that's the first half. Listen. For the first half of the film, that's what they want you to care about. Then they introduce fucking Kevin Spacey's Hungarian name, Kose or whatever he's called. Kaiser Soze.
You said it so many times.
You know that.
He's supposed to be Turkish. Some say his father was German. Nobody ever believed he was real. Nobody ever knew him or saw anybody that ever worked directly for him. But to hear Kobayashi tell it, anybody could have worked for Soze. You never knew. That was his power.
Like, then it twists to that. It's like, oh, yeah, Kaiser Soze. And then it twists to that. And then I get it. But I do feel like there's good elements in here. It's just a bit too many of them. Like, just keep one job. That's all I'll say about the plot. Just keep it to one job, maybe.
One thing I was wondering, I'm going to ask Gaz, just because, Len, I think you're too fresh to this. But when this was advertised, when it first came out, it was advertised, apparently, with the tagline, who is Kaiser Soze? But when I watched it, I was never really... wondering, I think especially the first time, oh, who is Kaiser Soze? It's going to be one of these guys. Which one is it? That never really occurred to me. What do you think, girls?
I think so. I'm trying to set my mind back to the first time I watched
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
obviously it's probably a while ago, but it's never been like, oh, I wonder who it actually is. It's more just basically what is going on.
Yeah, I think my thoughts would have been like, is Kaiser Soze actually a person? Like, is he?
Yeah.
Is he real?
It was like a fairy tale, really, like a scary one. That's scary it. Tale.
Scary tale. Very nice. And I do remember thinking this the first time I watched it. I remember thinking that. Well, first of all, I remember being very confused by the old guy in the boat. Because at that point, I was like, this Kaiser Soze is a myth. He's not real. Like, why is he so scared? But I do remember thinking that when Keaton is revealed to be Kaiser Soze, or is mentioned as being Kaiser Soze, I believed that.
Yeah.
I believed that at the time. And I thought, fuck, yeah. No way. That's
you
mental.
You feel like that's been set up throughout. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Gaz, that's the old, that's the twist. And then there's the twist after it. That's what I mean. Like, that is essentially what this film does. And yeah, I get that.
But the difference then between the Rick and Morty spoof of heist movies is that that as a twist, at the time, I think, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, wow, brilliant. That's really amazing. How cool. But then this other twist is actually that has been set up, and I know you feel like it hasn't been, but it has been, and everything else that happens, it makes it worthwhile. It works so well, and it's not just a new load of information. So my thought at the time when I first watched it, I think, Lucy, in answer to your original question ages ago, was that Keaton was Kaiser Soze, and that sort of blew my mind at the time. Only to be followed up by a better reveal later.
Obviously, I don't know about Kaiser Soze until halfway through the film. Like, honestly, like, I'd never seen that tagline. I'd never heard that. So for me, it was like, I don't know if this guy's real, and if he is, it's Kevin Spacey straight away. The moment they were like, basically from the start of the film, and I know it's because in my head I knew there was a twist, and yeah, like Gaz said, I'm probably subconsciously thinking about Kevin Spacey. But it was like, as soon as they were like, who's Kaiser Soze? I was like, it's 100% going to be Kevin Spacey. And then you even see the shot of the Hungarian guy. They're like, they do it like 45 minutes into the film. The guy doing, can you describe the guy to me? They show a shot of this person drawing it. I was like, this is the longest drawing of all time.
It has because taken a while.
By the time
while,
they've done a two-hour interrogation, they fax through the picture. I was like, it's definitely going to be him.
It's just the fax that took a while.
It's so obvious.
Bad connection. Mm. They do, I mean,
yeah, obviously.
This was 1995.
You watch it back, there's lots of times... Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, blah, 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 and people kept tying up the phone line so they couldn't get it through.
Mom, get off the internet. I'm trying to get a scan from the policeman.
Mom, fuck. But yeah, they do cut to verbal kin a lot when Kaiser Soze had been mentioned. That is part of the trivia of the film. So before we wrap up the podcast with a quiz for Len to check that he was paying attention to the film,
ooh,
we already
quiz.
Know that he had to keep probably pausing not. It, so we'll see. Just wanted to discuss what each of your favourite scenes in the films were and why. Now, Len, you weren't that big a fan of the film, but you've said there were some good moments, so what stands out for you?
Yeah. Now, I like that if you take it as a scene in general, the ending obviously is very good. Like, I think the way it's put together with, there's actually a very good line from what the fuck is that agent's name, whatever,
it's not
his mate whose office
one
they're
of
in
the questions. So his name is
okay,
Kujan.
Well, I don't know it, so
Kuyan.
Yes. There's a very good scene, a line, sorry, from his mate, because they're obviously conducting the interview in his office, and he's like,
man, you're a slob.
Yeah, but it all has a system, Dave. It all makes sense when you look at it, right? You gotta, like, stand back from it, you know? You wanna see a real horror show? See my garage.
And that's when it sort of clicks in his head, and it quickly shows all those images, and he drops the coffee cup in slow motion, and you see Kevin Spacey transform from the limp and the crippled hand just to a regular walk.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's all very well done. Like, I have no issues with any of that at all. So I think in isolation, that's a very good scene. And obviously, it's the scene that everyone will remember when they watch this film. I mean, I don't know about any other scenes that really stood out to me, to be completely honest with you. Obviously, the lineup, which is the image of the film, and is quite comical and, you know, silly. At the start.
Hand me the keys, you cocksucker.
In English, please.
Excuse me.
In English.
Hand me the fucking keys, you cocksucker. What the fuck?
Apparently, it was supposed to be serious, but Benicio del Toro kept farting, so they just kept laughing. And
classic,
in the end,
classic Benicio.
Yeah, I love him in this film.
I knew
we haven't really spoken about
so
that.
Good. We haven't spoken.
No,
about
yeah, Fenster. Yeah, yeah. His accent is bizarre.
It's great.
But
it's
yeah,
brilliant.
He was good.
Yeah.
Actually, I will say,
yeah.
I will say, out of all of the characters, Fenster was the one that I actually liked the most. So it was a shame when he got whacked first.
Flippier. A Flippier for real.
I say, you're Flippier.
He'll what?
Flippier. Flippy for real.
Yeah, I'm shaking.
Yeah.
More weird stuff that he
yeah.
says.
So for me, the end scene, obviously, and the lineup scene.
Okay, I'm going to go next. It's only a small scene, but I think it's really memorable, is when McManus, played by Stephen Baldwin, probably my second favourite Baldwin after Alec, he's sitting on top of the
yeah,
lift
always.
Up to the lawyer Kobayashi's office. And Kobayashi, who's played by British actor Pete Postlethwaite, R.I.P., he's flanked by two bodyguards in the lift. And as it ascends and goes dark between the floors, you hear two gunshots in the dark, bang, bang. And then as the lift goes back into the light again, you see Kobayashi standing alone with bloody gunshots on the window in the lift either side of him. And then the camera cuts to McManus just leering down at him. And I just love it. It's such a simple scene, but very effective and memorable. So that's probably my,
I did think,
other than
I,
the
I
ending,
did,
obviously.
I did, I did think the effects in that scene were actually very good with the strobe lighting. It was, that was all right.
That was all right. Gaz, what do you think?
Before I mention mine, I want to say that something, and I mean, you mentioned that we haven't really mentioned it, but I think the acting from, I think Stephen Baldwin's great in this. I love
quite unhinged. There's like, he seems like he's barely hanging on to not being violent.
Yeah, and Benicio del Toro.
Yeah.
I think both of them are great in this.
Yeah.
Great.
And all I'll say about Stephen Baldwin's character is I just felt like he was just that stereotypical, like, hey, man, I'll do what I want. You want to start something? And then out of nowhere, he was like the best assassin of all time. No, I was kind of like, mentioned. I don't understand. Your character's kind of like...
When
it just felt to me like he was when isn't out of nowhere, like some assassin. Sort of like 007 agent.
I mean, look, here's the thing.
When he isn't the assassin, when they're just doing little heists.
What do you mean? The first time, not when they're destroying tankards. He kills the two guys with double pistols who are holding his two mates. He shoots them both in the head.
Yeah, no, that's not the first time you see him. That's halfway through.
No, that's the first time you see him with a gun.
But also, just to go back to unreliable narrator, like, we actually don't know if that's the way he was at all.
It's portrayed as very gung-ho, you don't know.
So once again, I retract my statement saying that he was, that it was muddled, his character, because obviously the story is muddled intentionally. So, yeah.
I'll tell you, my favourite scene, it's going to sound really weird. It's a bit of a random selection, but I think he's an underrated presence in the film is, what's his name? Is it Peter Green? Who is Redfoot.
He's in The Mask. That's where
who is the bad guy from The Mask. And
Dorian. Yeah.
Dorian in The Mask. And he's, I love his screen presence. And
I really like his clothes. That nice look. He looks really cool.
Yeah, he's got cool clothes.
He looks so back. Fucking cool. And when he's like, enjoy LA, get yourself laid. I'm like, this guy's so cool.
He's like a 90s Matthew McConaughey, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know? Like a real 90s version.
Yeah, properly. And I like the two scenes with him in it. And like the tension of the second scene where, you know, you've got Stephen Baldwin wanting to kill him, and obviously Keaton's like, listen, I got this, don't worry, settle down, calm down. But the first scene as well, when Keaton reveals to him that he killed his mate in prison, I don't know, I like those two scenes, those two little standoffy scenes in LA. I haven't,
because that is quite character and dialogue led when a lot of the film isn't. Probably it does stand out, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I haven't quite sort of interpreted the meaning of that, because again, this is all from Kint's perspective, or Kaiser Soze's perspective,
pretending to be Kint.
I haven't quite worked out what the point of that is from his version of events, why that story is important, but I just like them. I like that character moment, those character moments.
A little bit of trivia: when Stephen Baldwin flicks the cigarette at him, it's supposed to land on his chest. No, the other way around. When Dorian flicks the cigarette at Stephen Baldwin, it's supposed to hit him in the chest, but it hits him in the face, and his reaction is real there.
It's such a good reaction.
Get the stuntman in. I thought, I was like, that's
a good
shot.
He's good in that film, actually, Stephen Baldwin. I know he's a bit of a nutter now, apparently, but he was on Celebrity Big Brother, which is that's the barometer of going a bit nuts.
That's low.
I think we've covered everything that we can. I mean, we haven't, because there's so much more we could probably say, but we are limited with time. If there's anything anyone else wants to add, please do. If not, it will be quiz time. Len, I hope you're ready.
Quiz time.
I'm scared for the quiz, to be completely honest
with you. It's not... Well, we'll see. You'll see.
Here's the thing. I need to score 3 out of 6, right? So 6 questions, 3 right. I believe that's good odds. No one's failed yet, so I'm ready.
So if you want any respect from your peers, you've got attention. To get at least 3. Anything less, no, you will have to watch the film again.
And to be honest with you, I don't want to watch it again.
I think you should. I think you should watch it again. I genuinely do, because I don't think you've come at
what
it.
What do I do?
Put
the dog
right
in the kennel?
Yeah, with the dog in the kennel. Yeah, that's the best way to watch any film.
It's the most expensive second viewing of all time.
Okay.
It's going to cost me about 250 quid to put her away for the day. Jesus.
It's worth it. Just to get that blueberry score up. Cue the music. Okay, so question one. What is the full name of Dean Keaton's lawyer girlfriend?
Fuck. Full name? It's like...
We find out she's been murdered as well at the end.
It's like Farriner or something. That's Farriner. Her surname.
Is that
her name? It's like...
Farriner. Is that your final answer? Farriner.
No, it's like Edith.
Oh, close.
Is her first name... Is her first name Edith?
No.
It's close to that. I don't know why I'm giving you clues. Fuck. I literally don't know why.
Edith Farriner, that's my guess. It's going to be fucking
that's
something
not,
similar to that.
That is not the worst guess I've ever had. It's better it's than not. Me saying Wenstrom for the ship in Alien.
Eileen Farriner?
No, it's Edie Finneran.
Oh, fucking hell, that's so close.
But that is wrong.
I know it doesn't sound it.
It's close.
Edie Finneran. I did think her surname was mental.
It's good, but like, it's not right.
And the way that Kobayashi says it, I was just like, what
don't
a
blame
weird
Kobayashi.
Way to...
It's not his fault.
Anyway.
Okay. Next question, number two. The so-called usual suspects meet at a police lineup for questioning following a truck hijack in NYC. Later in the film, it is revealed who was actually guilty of this crime. Who was it?
Yeah, it's quite a throwaway line, actually, and I did pick up on it. It was Todd. Todd, the character Todd.
Do you remember his surname? Doesn't matter if you don't.
Hockey or something. Todd Hockey?
Yeah, it's Hockney.
So close.
Todd Hockney, played by Kevin Pollack. So that is correct. Well done.
The most forgettable character, probably, of the lot. Maybe, arguably. Mm.
Maybe. Yeah, he does quite, a cool little wiping of his face when he's being a mechanic when the police come for him at the start.
Oh, yeah.
That's quite good.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah,
and
just clean himself up for the cops.
You'll note that he calls the cops when they do the stick-up cocksuckers. So there's a little hint back to the line that they all have to say. Question three. Kevin Spacey's character is nicknamed Verbal Kint, as people say he talks too much. What is his character's actual first name?
Great question.
Thanks, Gaz.
He only says it. It's Roger.
Correct.
Ooh, yes.
Well done. That's a good one. Did you know that, Gaz?
I knew it.
It's Roger, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, he says it in the... They say, who's the gimp over there? And yeah. You know, hold it, yeah.
He is and then properly the gimpy at that point.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know if we can say gimp, but we've said it.
No, they say it. We're just repeating the lines.
We are repeating the lines. In Detective Rabin's office, Verbal mentions that he belonged to a barbershop quarter in Illinois. In what town was this located?
Easy.
This is hard.
This is easy because he says it about a million times, and it reminded me of Home Alone. I don't know why, Gareth.
Gareth.
In Home Alone, because Gaz loves Home Alone. In Home Alone, when she gets a lift back home, spoiler warning for Home Alone, she rides with that polka band, right?
Polka.
And for some reason, every time he kept talking about this band in Skokie, Illinois,
yep.
I was like, it's reminding me of Polka Band from Home Alone, and he kept saying it.
That's probably why you didn't enjoy the film so much. You had John Candy polka, polka, polka in your head too much. But that is correct. Skokie, Illinois. So you've already got three.
I got three. Yes.
So well done. But let's see if you can get.
Hold on, sorry. Just as a bonus question, seeing as you have already got three, do you remember what the polka band are called in Home Alone?
The polkas.
That is poor. That's a
polkin
poor
trio. The polkin lads. I don't know. Look, lads are going poking.
You're not. Lads are going poking. Enough about your trips to Magaluf, mate. It was the
Oh dear.
There were the Kenosha Kickers.
Oh my god! Wow. I would never have got that. It's nowhere near.
Okay,
anyway.
Bonus point. Okay, so you're safe. You don't have to watch it again. Still think you should. Number five. Which organisation does Agent Kujan, who interviews Kint throughout the film, work
fuck.
For?
He's not the DA because Soze cuts a deal with the DA. And then he comes in. Probably the FBI.
No. It's the US Customs.
Oh, it's the... That's the worst department. Who cares about that? Anyway, next.
Well, they're assuming that there was a lot of coke stolen from their boat, so...
Yeah, true.
There we go. Right, last question. Verbal Kint walks with a limp. Which leg is affected?
It's the left leg.
Correct.
And his left hand is all left-sided.
So you've got 4 out of 6. That's very respectable. Ooh. For someone who had to pause the film 25 times and didn't really enjoy it. So, yeah, you don't have to watch it again. But give it some time, and I think you should.
Look, I'm not saying it's a bad film. 3 is a very good score. Like, anyone who thinks 3 is a bad score is silly, because that's not true.
You gave it 3, and you don't seem to really think it's that good, though, when you talk about it.
No, but I do think, as I told you, I respect it in terms of at the time it was made and everything it was doing. And obviously, for me, it's sullied because maybe I know there's a twist in the film. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I do think that since it has been made, there are other films who have done twists to a more elegant degree. And that may be a more simplified way that is less... There's just a lot of information in this film that I feel like you could cut a lot of the information out. And then I think about other films, like we talked about Reservoir Dogs, where the dialogue and the character dialogue... And Gaz, you'll be testament to this. In Reservoir Dogs, we talk about the opening scene where they're all just sitting around a table talking. Within that scene, that one scene, which we've called one of the best openings of all time, we all said it was amazing, you actually get to know the characters. Within a five or six or seven minute scene, we've learned all of the characters. We sort of can sense what sort of vibe they're giving off. We know whether they're likable or dislikable. And that goes throughout that movie. And I feel like what this film is lacking to me is any of that sort of realistic dialogue and realistic character development, which for me means...
I don't think Tarantino's realistic dialogue, though, is it?
No, I think his dialogue's... I think his dialogue's the best scripted dialogue.
It's highly stylized, though. It's not realistic.
Yeah, it's stylized, but I mean, like, you listen to these characters and you actually believe what they're saying, whereas... And the thing is, the twist in that film and the twist in those sorts of films works because I care about the characters. And that's the only thing that falls down for me, is my care of the characters, therefore meaning that the twist to me isn't a shock and isn't like something that I really care about. So that's all I'll say about it. I think the execution's
damning
fine.
Damning critique from Len.
It's not a damning critique. And I respect the film. I didn't dislike the film. I gave it 3 blueberries. Editing good, acting okay. The camera work's good, you know, the general idea's there. I just think it could have been better if it was simplified and you cared a little bit more about Keaton and you cared a little bit more about the other supporting cast members, other than Fenster, who I do think is actually quite cool.
I think that is all deliberate, but obviously the way that you have viewed the film, it's up to you how you interpret it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And right, obviously I had a great day in my face for... would say 45 minutes of this film. Anyway. And, you know, and she's a big girl. She's a big girl sitting on my lap.
Big girl. Okay, well, I think that about does it for us here, unless you've got any parting words that you'd like to add, Gaz?
I think I would just like to say that the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing people that he didn't exist.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Ooh. Yeah. And with that, he's gone. I mean, he's not gone. Because we're
we need to know what we're doing next, team.
So the next one of these podcasts we're going to do is the
this
film...
one is mental.
This one is mental. I think this is the worst.
This might be the worst one.
So this is Emma's film that she really should have seen but hasn't.
No, she's not here. So let's properly slag her off. This is unbelievable. She should be ashamed of herself.
This is ridiculous.
I'm angry.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my favourite films ever. Like, it is just such a classic. It's the Ridley Scott epic, the film that made a star out of Russell Crowe, for better or for worse. Gladiator. Emma hasn't seen Gladiator.
She hasn't seen
mental.
Gladiator.
Emma, how the fuck have you not seen that?
Well,
I will say, like, I thought Reservoir Dogs was the worst that no one has seen. And then Aliens came out. Lucy said that, and I was like, well, that's actually worse in my opinion because, you know, that is just worse. And now this has come out, and this is big screen.
Yeah,
everyone has seen it. Cannon fodder.
This is universal.
There's no reason that people wouldn't like this film. Like, it's almost want to watch this film. Like, it treads so many genres: blockbuster, history, war,
romance,
romance. It's epic. It's got everything in it.
It's cinema. Yeah. It's almost, in its purest form.
I would say it's almost like it's part of a generation-defining group of films. 100%.
It got me into film. I think, like, mental. Really into those kind of films, like classic cinema. Oh, I just absolutely love it. I can't wait to talk about it.
You know what? And before Emma even mentioned it, it was recently added to Netflix here.
Yeah.
And I was just scrolling through the other day, and you know, it's such a good Sunday movie.
Oh,
it's
my God, such a good Sunday movie. I actually movie. Said that to Aaron yesterday. I was like, let's watch it last night. And I was actually, it's a Sunday film. You know what? Let's watch it Sunday.
Tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to tuck up with a blanket, get my dog and my girlfriend involved, and we're going to watch Gladiator. Probably.
Do you know what? Let's do a Netflix party. Your household and mine. We'll do Gladiator tomorrow. So
that sounds like
just
a party.
Just for reference as well, here in Melbourne, in Australia, we've gone back into lockdown. We were in lockdown, again. We came out of it. Len and I hung out like every day. We were constantly hugging. And then they've said no more hugging for anybody. Yeah. Go back to your own individual houses. So we're separated again, which is devastating for both.
That's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining me today for this discussion.
Thanks for hosting, Lucy.
You're more than welcome. Stay safe, and thanks for listening out there.
Yeah.
And we'll see you very soon.
Stay safe, everybody.
Bye. See ya. The greatest trick the devil ever did was telling everyone that The Usual Suspects is a 5 blueberry film.
And
goodbye.
With that, they were gone.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.